Welcome to In Season, where we explore the farms and gardens of the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff, and joining me in the studio today is one of my favorite people, Andy Catalano. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you so much, Teresa.
For those of you that don't know, that didn't read Coast Weekend, and don't know that Andy was named Chef of the Year by the People's Choice Award, Andy is a local chef. He's been working recently at Street 14, but he's now branched off into a new venture that I'm really excited about. And one of the reasons I'm excited about talking to Andy is that over the years, we've developed a really good farmer-chef relationship. And that relationship, I think, is the foundation of a successful local food system. So I want to talk about that with Andy. And I will say that I learned recently that Andy started his journey as a chef through working on an organic farm in Italy.
That's right.
And tell me a little bit about how you ended up there and how that got you started on this path.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Teresa. I studied for a semester in Italy when I was in college, about
what were you studying?
15 years ago, studying philosophy, and just had the chance to get abroad. And I have some Italian ancestry, so I thought I'd go to Italy. There was a program in Bologna. So I studied in Bologna for 6 months, and during that time, I traveled around the whole country and really got to know the culture and the food and kind of the Italian sensibility around food. And so when I graduated from college, I had the opportunity to go back to Italy through a program called WOOF, which used to stand for Willing Workers on Organic Farms, but I think it's changed now.
It's like worldwide
something
workers
or
on organic farms. It's something similar, but yeah. But
WOOF, yeah.
You hear about woofers.
Yes.
So you were a woofer.
And there are local woofers, too. I know there are some farms around here that offer that. I was a woofer for a year throughout Italy. I spent a few months on a farm in Tuscany, and then I went down to Abruzzo, which is kind of in the southern part of the boot, and then back up to Umbria, and just very small farms, all organic produce, goats, sheep, a lot of cheese making and things like that. And it was just a really great opportunity to immerse myself in a culture, learn a language, and then particularly on the farms to really get to know the Italian way of food, which at its core is about simplicity and finding the best ingredients and then just getting out of their way, doing as little as you have to them to get them on the table for dinner.
Did you cook before then? Were you much of a cook before then?
Oh, very casually. I mean, I was interested in it. I never had a job as a cook before that. But I would, you know, cook for my friends on weekends and things like that.
Yeah.
So I was always interested, but
did you
not
learn
really
cooking
informed
from the farmers there? I mean, like, because I know part of being a woofer is like you're living with the families, right?
Right. And all these places were also agriturismi, which essentially they offered guest houses to, you know, city folk who wanted to get out for the weekend and get their hands dirty.
So people would come and stay on the farm.
They would come and stay on the farm and, you know, do a little bit of, you know, pick some carrots. And then there would be always kind of a small restaurant on the premises where they would eat dinner. And I would just kind of get thrown in there, you know, shucking beans or chopping herbs or anything like that. And that was really my first official, you know, foray into the cooking world. So I did that for a year and really started with vegetables. And that's always where my cooking kind of comes back to is, you know, vegetable focused. What's growing, what's in season, what's beautiful right now, and try to highlight that.
And that's a real challenge, I know, especially now that you've moved out here. So you went through a time working in New York, right, at different restaurants there.
Yeah, I came back from Italy and wanted to actually learn how to be a professional cook. So I managed to get my foot in the door at a place in Brooklyn called Franny's, which ended up being a really wonderful first official restaurant. It was small, but the cooks who worked there had all, you know, cooked for many years in big places in Manhattan and just wanted to do good food on a small scale. So it was a good place to learn, just learn the fundamentals.
And did they try working with farmers? Were they using seasonal produce?
Yeah, that was hyper-seasonal for the time. I mean, now every place in Brooklyn is locally sourced, which is great. But this was about over 10 years ago. And so they were really one of the first to, you know, they wouldn't use basil out of season on their pizza.
There's
a big wood fire out there, so they did pizzas.
And tomatoes.
Yep.
So, I mean, that one always kills me. I have to say, like, those out-of-season tomatoes just taste like nothing.
Oh, it breaks my heart. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I eat tomatoes intensively for about 6 weeks a year, and then I'm done.
Yeah. So did you learn then, did you watch the people there, like, working with farmers and cultivating those relationships? Was that an education for you as well?
Absolutely, yeah. And especially the place I went after, Franny's Gramercy Tavern, I was there for a few years, and that was really an education.
I mean, that's a very famous restaurant.
Yeah, it's honestly, I think it's one of the best restaurants in the world. I mean,
I would really love to eat there someday. Yeah.
Yeah, and not just the food, just the sense of hospitality that they create is really, really special. I mean, there have been people who have been working there since the day it opened in 1994. Yeah. So they really, it's really a family. So that was a great couple of years working and learning there. And they had recently, a new chef had just started there a few months before I did, named Michael Anthony, and he was all about local sourcing, seasonal cooking. So I really got a great education in the possibilities and, more importantly, the limitations of sourcing locally.
And what do you think some of those limitations are? I mean, I feel like I'm asking you a leading question because I kind of know what it's supposed to be. You know, I mean, as a farmer, I get it. But I mean, you and I have had this conversation over the months that we've worked together, years we've worked together now as farmer and chef, with you saying, hey, Teresa, what have you got? And me saying, hey, nothing, because the weather's terrible, you know? I've got so much of this. Can you take a lot of it? And it feels sometimes feast or famine.
Yeah. Well, starting from the kind of the sparse end of the spectrum, especially out here in a place that has some pretty severe winters, at least this year.
Yeah.
You have to get to know how to cook potatoes a lot of ways and get to start to enjoy leeks and beets and all those things that store well over the winter. And for me, as a cook, I find any sort of parameters very liberating, because if I had, you know, free rein of the grocery store, I wouldn't know what to cook for dinner.
But if I say I've got these three things available,
exactly,
make something out of that
for me. And that's I think the biggest charm of cooking seasonally is that you have those limits built in to your local climate. So, you know, you see what is available, and then you know, given leeks, beets, and potatoes, you create a dish.
And that's kind of amazing. I will just simply say that what's fascinating, if take an ingredient like kale, a plant that is very ubiquitous out here, and everyone grows it, and it's gone through its trendy moment, and I think is sort of fading. But kale is something we grow a lot on our farm, and I think what's fascinating is understanding how to cook it well, and how to prepare it well can really transform a person's experience of a plant. Mm-hmm. I know that I would harvest kale and bring it to you at Street 14, and you would prepare a meal with it. And then I would harvest that same kale and take it into my kitchen and prepare, like, say, a kale salad. Mm-hmm. And I would eat my kale salad and think, this is pretty good. I'm feeling pretty proud of myself. And then I would go eat your kale salad and would be like, what did you do? This is amazing. And mine wasn't amazing. It was good, but it wasn't amazing. So what do you think are some of the keys that maybe people miss when they're working with fresh produce? Do we try to do too much to it?
Well, first, I'll say that if I ate your kale salad, I bet I would have found that amazing. We're all our own worst critics.
Thank you for that. I doubt it, but yes.
And kale is a great ingredient to focus on because, as you know, it grows
well around here. Yeah.
You know, almost year-round you can get kale in some form or another. And that kale, there are a lot of different varieties. And within a variety, depending on the season, the taste and texture changes considerably. So, you know, if we're getting nice baby kale in the spring, I'll eat it whole, you know, ribs and all. Dress it with, you know, kale has an aggressive flavor even when it's small like that. So it takes some, you know, some acid, some lemon juice, good olive oil, enough salt. And you really have to work that into the greens, you know.
So do you do the massaging of the kale? You massager? Which is kind of satisfying to do.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, most salads I'll dress extremely lightly, just very gently. But kale really needs to be worked.
So do you just get in there with your hands and really rub it in?
Yeah.
And from what I understand, the lemon juice, the acidity is also helping to break down.
Definitely, yeah. And as you get these ingredients in, you really have to just keep tasting, know, because they do change throughout the year. And if you, you know, taste a piece of kale and then taste another piece with a little squeeze of lemon on it, it'll be a world of difference.
So then later season, really mature,
as it
tough
gets
kale.
More mature and tougher, yeah, you know, break it, strip it off the ribs,
mm-hmm.
tear it up into smaller pieces, and then I just like to do a little bit of olive oil in a pan, smash a garlic clove, add the kale in there with a splash of water, and just let it go for a couple minutes. Season it with salt and a splash of vinegar, and you're done.
I mean, you make it sound so easy.
Oh, it is easy. Yeah, it's just, I mean, do it every day for 15 years, and
that's true. That's easy. True. So, so I also want to bring up, you have you've been inspired to start a new business for yourself, and called Alimento.
Yes, correct.
And it's only just beginning to launch.
Yes, the so first official week is next week.
Okay.
Friday, May 26th.
Tell people a little bit about what that's going to be.
Sure. Well, I worked at Street 14 Cafe for 2 years, launched the dinner service there, which was all locally sourced. Everything on the menu came from.
Yeah,
right,
you worked with a lot
here.
Of farmers.
Mm-hmm. A couple dozen, yeah. And that was really the accomplishment that I was most proud of that we did over there was just develop these relationships with the farms. And I really, when dinner ended over there a couple months ago, I really wanted to keep those relationships alive. Sadly, I think that sort of local focus isn't as intensive at many other places.
Yeah.
So I wanted to start my own business in order to connect the local farmers with local consumers, because I think a lot of people don't know that there's so much beautiful produce being grown right around here, and it's just not being enjoyed.
There really is. It's kind of mind-blowing how many small farms there are in our region now.
Yeah, really. So Alimento, my new business, is essentially a CSA of prepared food. So you get a weekly delivery with all locally sourced produce, humanely raised meats from local ranches, sustainably caught fish, and recipes.
Okay.
So
it's a meal kit.
Exactly. It's a meal kit. Yeah. Locally sourced meal kit. Mm-hmm.
And do you do any preparation of the food? Are you doing any of the chopping or cutting up or preparing or marinating? Or to what degree are you pre-preparing it for people?
Right. And this is largely speculation since it hasn't actually
gone
out
yet. I know.
But most of the produce will be just packed for you, not prepared. And then I will incorporate some kind of cooking techniques that I kind of used a lot at Street 14 and people seem to enjoy, such as fresh pastas. That'll be part of the meal kit, and pickles and ferments and things like that.
I am really excited about this.
Thank you. I'm excited too.
I'm excited about it. I mean, partly because I want to have you deliver these to the farm. It's one of the big jokes, and I talk to other farmers about this a lot, especially once our season really gets going. You know, here we are, we're out there harvesting, you know, beautiful organic produce and packing it into boxes and driving it to town, and we're in such a hurry that, you know, I'm eating a peanut butter and jelly sandwich mm-hmm. while I'm driving mm-hmm. my CSA boxes to town with full of beautiful produce because you just don't have time to cook.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds like a cook's life. I mean, I've eaten plenty of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches right before service.
I know, and then you're serving this incredible, beautiful food. So I feel really excited about it, and hopefully, like, exposing people to how good fresh produce can taste mm-hmm. will inspire them as well. I know a lot of people, I talk to a lot of home gardeners as well, and people who come to farmers markets, and sometimes that, well, what is it? What do I do with it? Or you take it home or you harvest it from your garden and you cook it and it's like, yeah, that doesn't taste very good. Mm-hmm. Either I'm not going to grow that again. I'm not going to get that from the farmer's market. I'm not going to eat that again. It can be very discouraging. So maybe having someone help you along with, hey, here's how good food can taste.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really the motivation is to give people an opportunity to eat the food that's being grown right around them.
I know.
And to really, you know, be able to eat chemical-free food on a regular basis taste the difference. You
know? Such a treat. I am going to take a very short break here just to remind people that you're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and we're streaming live at coastradio.org. And if you are just joining us for In Season this morning, I am talking with Chef Andy Catalano about his new venture, Alimento, and also about the whole farmer-chef relationship, cooking seasonally, using fresh produce, and what you do with it. And I'm already hungry. I'm just going to say this right now. And one thing that you do so well is work with pickles and ferments. You just mentioned this recently. Mm-hmm. that's a great way to deal with, like, I've got a lot of this right now, and I want to be able to use it over a long period of time, but it's going to go bad before if I want to save it fresh. Talk a little about how to make pickles, how to ferment, like, how do you, what approach do you take with that?
Well, that's really the heart of seasonal cooking, is taking a sudden abundance and making it last. And pickling and fermenting is a great way to do that.
Do you process your pickles, or are they pretty much like quick pickles?
They're essentially quick pickles. Yeah, typically what I'll do at home is whatever the vegetable is, I will make a brine, which is, I'll give you the secret formula here.
Okay.
3 parts vinegar, 1 part water, 1 part sugar, and a handful of salt.
How big are your hands?
Bring it all up to a boil and then pour it over the cut up vegetable.
Okay.
And let it cool to room temperature and then put it in the fridge. And don't taste them for about a week. And then you've got pickles. And of course, there are infinite variations within this formula.
Okay.
You know, a denser vegetable like a carrot, you would cut up smaller.
Yeah.
Something like a cucumber with a lot of moisture content, you would leave in bigger pieces.
Okay.
And then you incorporate any spices that you want in there, or herbs or garlic.
So, but once you get the basic brine.
Basic brine, and then just tweak it. Any way that kind of, that's where your creativity comes in, you know. If you want garlicky black pepper, dill pickles, then
add
that to the brine. Yeah, add garlic and black pepper and dill.
Wow.
And that's, I mean, that's really, that's how I pickle vegetables.
You make it sound so easy.
Oh, and it really is. Yeah.
I know, but it's crazy because I will make pickles at home. And I feel like I make some decent pickles. But I, again, you know, my taster is always my husband, Packy. And you know, he won't eat my pickles, but when we would go and eat at your restaurant, he'd be like, these pickles are great, you know? And I still have this really strong memory of one night going to the restaurant and you serving us this amazing pasta. I think it was the bucatini, the one with the spaghetti with the hole in it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It was bucatini with butter and kimchi.
Oh, you know what? That was peachy. That was hand-rolled thick spaghetti.
Okay.
Yeah.
And tossed with butter and then kimchi, which is a Korean traditional, like, kind of fermented
spicy cabbage
thing. And I remember, because you sent that out to us as kind of like a, hey, welcome chefs, you know, here you go, a little taster of this, and which is really sweet of you. And I looked at Packy and I'm like, he is never going to eat that. I'm going to have to eat his pasta with kimchi. And that was one of the first times I've seen him like lick a bowl literally in public, and then was eyeing mine, and I had to kind of fight him off with my fork. And I was like, you're eating kimchi. Who are you? And, you know, it was amazing. So, I mean, it's just, is that also something that you do that simply, or is kimchi more complicated?
Kimchi is a different method because it's a ferment, but it's perhaps even more simple than a pickle, than a vinegar pickle. It's really kimchi. I don't want to offend any traditional Korean kimchi makers because my kimchi is not authentic. But the process is essentially salt, Napa cabbage, and then there's usually fresh chilies or chili paste. Or I always have a stock of fermented chili paste that I make every year. So I'll add a few spoonfuls of that to it, garlic, green onions, and then you just weight it all down, and the salt will draw the water out of the cabbage, like you're making sauerkraut, pretty much. Salt will draw the water out of the cabbage, and then once it's submerged, you keep that weight on there and put it in a cool, dark room for 6 to 8 weeks, and then you've got kimchi.
Wow.
And it's just, it really, the fermentation process in general, kimchi specifically, but fermenting in general, really unlocks amazing flavors that you can't cook up. I mean, it's a completely different category of food preparation, and not to mention the health benefits of it.
Yeah.
All the good bacteria.
Yeah. And that's certainly something that we hear more and more about. People talk about adding, you know, good bacteria into your diet, that it's healthy for our guts, and that's so important for our overall health. So fermented foods, I know, are getting a new lease on life, or a lot more interest, even more so than they already had, I think, because of that. And fermenting is such a great way to deal with an abundance of whatever it is that you've got. And I know that a lot of times home gardeners face that, where they're suddenly like, they planted, you know, 10 cabbage plants thinking, oh yeah, that's great, a bunch of cabbage. And then suddenly you've got 10 heads of cabbage. Yeah, they're all ripe at the same time. What are you going
to
do with
that? I think I've offered to take a lot of cabbage off your hands on several occasions.
And it's great. And I think that that's also something that, you know, for small farmers in our area, sometimes you do have this abundance, or you harvest a bunch of stuff and go to the farmer's market, and maybe it's one of those terrible, rainy, awful days, or just for some reason no one shows up and you've got all this harvested produce. Having chefs that you can say, turn to and say, hey, do you want to make some sauerkraut? is a wonderful thing to have. Yeah.
Agreed.
So what are some of your favorite vegetables that you work with here, like that you've had to work with more in our region?
Oh, well,
aside from kale, I know.
Yeah. Kale, I do. I have really been opened up to the world of kale. Kales in general, brassicas in general, but so many different kales grow so well out here.
Uh-huh.
Really, and such a flavor spectrum. So I do love kale.
Yeah.
Mushrooms, the world of mushrooms is really...
Yeah, it's amazing out here, isn't it?
Deep. Yeah, it's really marvelous. And certain years you can get mushrooms year-round. And we have some great foragers that I've worked with through different restaurants.
Uh-huh.
So I really love mushrooms. We've had this conversation before where we try to talk about what you're going to be planting for the season.
Uh-huh.
And I just... You ask me what I want planted, and I really never have an answer for it because I take what's there. And,
you do.
You know, I treat all vegetables. I love all vegetables equally.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, whatever you're bringing from the garden, I'm going to do something with.
What also is fascinating, and I wonder if this is partly your exposure to working with learning to cook in Italy, mm-hmm. or being exposed to that, the bitterness, like herbs and flavors that are more on the bitter spectrum. That's something that you've definitely been more willing to experience. I know last year I love growing this plant, shiso. It's a Japanese herb. It's a beautiful plant. And honestly, I'll grow it ornamentally or grow it for bouquets, but it's got a beautiful flavor to it. And I don't even really sure how to describe it. But you were the first chef that I knew that actually wanted it.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, you know, okay, I'll grow that. Because, you know, I had stopped growing it, mm-hmm. because I couldn't sell it as a plant start. I couldn't give it away to anybody. People were like, what is this? And then they would taste it and it would be like, that's kind of bitter and weird. And
that shiso's a really interesting herb. Yeah, it's kind of bitter, but it's also, I also think it always reminds me of like maple syrup in a way too.
Yeah.
It's got this weird sweet bitter thing and floral. I'm trying to remember what I did with the shiso. Oh, I think I put it in a vegetable tempura. So I battered it and fried it with a bunch of vegetables.
Yeah.
Because it does have a pretty pronounced flavor.
Yeah.
Bitterness.
It's used a lot in Japanese cooking, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. traditionally. And I think, do they even pickle it or served with salad or something like this? I don't know. But it's just one of those like more that bitter flavor that I think we shy away from, or we've grown to shy away from, especially in American cooking, because it's gone so much more to the sweet. So do you find people are open to eating more bitter foods?
Well, no, but hopefully soon they will be. Yeah, I've talked to, you're not the only farmer I've talked to about growing more bitter greens, because I love, you know, broccoli robs in general.
Uh-huh.
I love chicories.
Uh-huh.
I very much enjoy bitterness in the context of a dish.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people use fresh herbs very enthusiastically, but I think bitter greens offer a same kind of punctuating component. So if you do have a naturally sweet vegetable like carrots or something, having something to kind of balance that sweet, whether it's an herb or if it's a bitter green.
Mm-hmm. Dandelion
greens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really adds a lot to a dish. Yeah.
So if people are interested in learning more about your new venture,
mm-hmm.
I know you're starting really small.
I am.
Mm-hmm. So there may be a waiting list. But Alimento, explain again, it's going to be a home...
Locally sourced meal kit.
Yeah.
And you can sign up week to week. There won't be any sort of subscription offering, at least not now. So you can just sign up for a week and then take the rest of the month off. If
people
want
to find out more about what you're doing, you have a website.
I've got a website, alimentoastoria.com.
Okay. So mm-hmm. you can go check that out and see what Andy Catalano is doing in his new venture, working with fresh food. And so this is a challenging year for working with fresh food.
Oh, what a year to start a locally sourced food business.
I know. So are you hearing from all the farmers in our region that everyone's kind of struggling?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But do you...
I was at the Sunday market this past weekend and... Jeff from Kingfisher had a sign up saying, due to the wet, cold winter, locally sourced organic produce will be late this year.
You know, and if Jeff Trenary and Kingfisher Farms is late, you know it's a rough year, because he's an amazing farmer and always has stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's hard to say. It makes me feel a little bit better and less of a failure. Like it is, but it is. Things are growing so slowly this year.
Oh, it's impossible. I have so much respect for you guys. Yeah. And I was in Portland a couple of weeks ago and I was at the Saturday market and there was just overflowing bounty of summer produce there. And it just
it's so unfair.
Made me jealous, but it also made me very just honored to live where I live and to be able to be a part of the the community and take part in the struggles.
I know there's pros and cons to farming in this coastal climate. Mm-hmm. And I think we're definitely experiencing some of the cons this year. Mm-hmm. But hopefully it will be an abundant summer.
Fingers crossed.
And you know, sometimes when you get these really horrible cold springs, you get a really beautiful fall. Mm-hmm. And we may get that nice late dry fall that will mean beautiful winter squash and late leeks and lots of things that will be fun for you to work with. I know. So hopefully people will be inspired to try more with their fresh food. And
as far as the meal kit's concerned, we are getting off to a late start with the produce, but there's still plenty out there.
Yeah. There'll be stuff for you to work with.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I definitely recommend people try and experience this from you, because learning to cook with you, like kind of at your elbow, coaching you and saying, here's what you can do with fresh food would be an amazing experience. I'm so inspired. And I'm excited to get to keep eating your cooking, quite frankly, because it's so good. And I'm still convinced that you make a much better kale salad than I do. So again, if you are interested, you can check out elementoastoria.com. Mm-hmm.
And I should just say real quick about what Elemento means. Uh-huh. It's Italian, which is kind of a nod to the food traditions that I celebrate. Yeah. And it is pretty much a word that means food, but it has sort of a nourishment connotation to it. Uh-huh. And, you know, food as something that sustains us. So it has that kind of...
food is nourishment.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's really true. I mean, and that's something that's so wonderful working with fresh food as a grower, as a consumer. I think that's one of the best ways I think that we can treat each other is to cook for one another. It's such an expression of love.
Oh, I agree.
And community. I know. Thank you. I'm so hungry. I'm going to go try and cook something for myself now. Thanks for joining us for this week's In Season. This show will be available as a podcast later on once Kate gets it up on the air. So, fingers crossed we're going to have some good weather soon. And we can all get outside. Thanks. Bye.